The Las Vegas Raiders have partnered with the global lifestyle app True Connect to give the gift of wellness. Transform your mind, body, and soul through thousands of hours of premium fitness content, guided meditations, progress tracking, and more. Visit tcfree.fit to redeem one free year of True Connect exclusively for Raider Nation.
Raider Nation, this is Max Crosby, and you're listening to the Raiders Podcast Network.
It's draft week, and Tom Telesco is headed to Detroit with 8 picks in his pocket. We talk draft strategy with the Raiders GM. Also, NFL Network's Bucky Brooks, Rhett Lewis, and Mike Yam stop by to give their take. Plus, we can't do a show without JJ. Former Raider and Fox analyst James Jones breaks down the Raiders' biggest area of need. Welcome in to the Raiders Draft Special. I'm Amber Theo Harris. Drafts matter. A bad one can throw your team off for a decade, but a good one can get you to the playoffs the very next year. Look at the 23 Texans. C.J. Stroud at number 2. Will Anderson at number 3. That's 2 picks, 2 Pro Bowls, 1 Rookie of the Year, and 1 playoff appearance. That's what we call immediate return on investment. And they did it with a young defensive-minded head coach in D'Amico Ryans. So you see the parallels here? But the Texans didn't have superstars like Max Crosby or Devontae Adams or emerging players like Malcolm Kuntz and Jack Jones already on their roster. If the Raiders hit on this draft, they could be the turnaround team of 2024. And to talk about what the Raiders might do, we welcome in a man who has seen the power of many drafts. We say hello to NFL Network's Rhett Lewis. Rhett, it is always good to see you, and even better to see you in the silver and black, my friends.
Let's go. What's up, Raider Nation? Yeah, great to be with you, Amber. Love talking draft. Love talking the possibilities that Tom Telesco and Antonio Pierce and this Raiders team really have in front of them as we get this thing rolling on Thursday.
It is exciting. It feels like Christmas. And let's start with the idea I was just talking about, the idea of a quick turnaround. In your opinion, do the Raiders have one of the more ready-made rosters in the NFL? And if they do select the right quarterback, could it produce immediate dividends?
I think any time that you throw a potential game changer into the mix at quarterback, yes, I think that can, because I don't think anybody went into, just to kind of go back to what you were saying at the top of the show, I don't think anybody went into the 23 season thinking, holy smokes, the Houston Texans are going to go to the playoffs, they're going to win a playoff game, and they're going to be poised, you know, to compete for that division title for the next 10 years like that. And look, that's what C.J. Stroud did. Now, could that be the case here for the Raiders? It's going to be harder because they're picking at 13, not at 2 and 3 like the Texans did. But look, Tom Telesco knows what he's doing here. He knows what it means to pick big-time quarterbacks. Took Justin Herbert, right, as GM of the Chargers. Helped in that evaluation process of Andrew Luck back when he was with the Indianapolis Colts. So the pedigree is there. Now, are the players going to be there at 13? The players that they love is really the question.
Well, according to your predictions, you have the Raiders taking Michael Penix Jr. at 13. What makes you believe he'll still be there? There's a lot of teams that need quarterbacks.
Yeah, definitely. And look, I think at that point, I would have 4 quarterbacks going before Michael Penix comes up on the board for the Las Vegas Raiders at 13. And to me, the formula there for him is very simple. Intoxicating arm talent, unwavering confidence in using that arm to push the ball down the field. And you throw in the athleticism that he showed at his pro day, running a high 4.440, and he can move around in the pocket with some suddenness there, but likes to operate from the pocket. I don't think there's a way to look at Michael Penix Jr. as anything but an appealing player at number 13 and at quarterback in this draft.
That's good to hear. The Raiders do have 2 quarterbacks on their roster. They have Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. Both have been starters in the NFL. But in your opinion, can this team get to the playoffs if those are the 2 quarterbacks they go forward with, if they do not get a premier quarterback in the draft?
Yeah, and I mentioned that in a piece I've got out on Raiders.com right now, assessing all the different ways that the Raiders could look at the quarterback position in this draft. And the big caveat at the top was, look, let's understand a couple of facts here. That Aiden O'Connell had this team competitive down the stretch. And for a rookie in a tough situation, performed very well. He's an accurate player, doesn't have the biggest arm out there, but he gets the job done. And then you look at Gardner Minshew, who comes over from the Colts and was a drop pass on fourth down away from leading the Colts past the Texans to win the AFC South and get into the playoffs that way. So Gardner Minshew can win football games. Aiden O'Connell can win football games. They can keep you competitive. But look, in my opinion, at this point, if Michael Penix comes onto this roster, he becomes the best pure passer on the roster.
Well, any team, I mean, you're saying Penix will be there at 13, but let's say they want somebody else. Any team that is going to trade up to 3, 4, or 5, which are all possibilities, to get a quarterback, they'll most likely they'll have to give up 3 first round picks. And what, from a logistics standpoint, would that trade have to happen before the draft? That doesn't seem like something you're pulling the trigger on right after number one goes or number two goes.
Well, here's the thing on that. The timing of the trades, I think, with the quarterbacks is going to be really interesting, right? And it's going to be a matter of, all right, do we love the players that are on the board here? Like, if you're going to move up to 3 right now, you've got to be comfortable with both Jaden Daniels and Drake May. Like, really
comfortable. And that's the kicker, right?
I'm not totally sure.
That's the kicker. It's because you can't predict what the Commanders are going
to
do.
Yeah, and if you're going to trade up to 4, then we really don't know. You got to be comfortable with all, 4 quarterbacks at that point. I think we're all kind of assuming at this point that Caleb Williams is going to go to the Bears. So yeah, I really think that if somebody's going to make that move up to number 3, it's going to happen after the second pick is made. But if somebody really wants to go up to number 2, and sure, it could be the Raiders. Tom Telesco has said that, they've got a plan to move up if everything falls into place. Then you could make that trade before draft day.
Well, Adam Peters has said he ain't moving from 2, but all things are open. Depends on what you're offering.
I wouldn't either
if I were them. No secret, though. Yeah. The Raiders have not found a lot of recent success in the first round. Josh Jacobs is an exception there. Should Raider Nation feel more confident with a veteran GM like Tom Telesco leading the process this year?
I would feel supremely confident with Tom Telesco leading the charge. I think we want to talk a lot about what he did with, a player like Justin Herbert. But you go back to what Derwin James has done for that Chargers franchise. When healthy on the defensive side of the ball is a cornerstone type of player. Look at what he did and drafted a rookie Pro Bowler in Rashawn Slater out at left tackle. So if quarterback's not in play, I feel very comfortable. And then went and got Zion, the next year to play the interior out of Boston College in the first round. So if quarterback isn't on the docket at 13, there's going to be a really good offensive lineman and offensive tackle there as well that I could totally see, the Raiders entertaining that possibility. And I'd have, every confidence that Tom Telesco is going to get an impact dude really from day one right there with that 13th pick.
Yeah, and not just offensive line, Rhett. There could be two of the top corners sliding down the board. Quinyon Mitchell, Arnold could still be there, and that would look really good across from Jack Jones. The Raiders play in the AFC West. They have to stop a guy named Patrick Mahomes. Could you see Telesco prioritizing corner in the first round?
Yeah, and here's where I think it ultimately comes down to, right? And this is probably some of the conversations that are going on at a much higher level inside the Raiders draft room right now. But they could be looking at this and saying, once 13 comes up, all right, we've got probably an opportunity to draft the 3rd or 4th tackle on our board. How much higher or lower is that player than the 1st or 2nd corner that might be available as well? And how does that dichotomy really match up in terms of our value and how we place it there at 13? So is the 3rd tackle higher than the 1st corner, or is that 2nd corner higher than the 4th tackle? Those are the type of things that you have to weigh out. In a 7-round mock draft that I just completed and filed to Raiders.com, which you're going to see a little bit later this week, I actually have them taking the corner in the 2nd round at pick 44, going with Max Melton, really good player with inside-outside flexibility from Rutgers, was one of the best in the Big Ten, ran a 40 in 4.39, so he's got all the speed, got all the traits, and is a real smooth guy in coverage, was down at the Senior Bowl as well. So that's another way to look at it there when you get to round 2.
Hey, I think that'd be a successful draft, getting a quarterback at 13 and then a starting corner at 44. I think they would walk away feeling good. Tom Telesco's old team, the Chargers, they sit at number 5. That could be a spot the Raiders could have access to and might be interested in. But what do you think first-time GM Joe Ortiz will do at five. Do you see him trading out, or that, you know, they have needs?
Yeah,
they got rid of a lot of guys because of cap casualties.
Yeah. And look, I think you're also trying to understand your new head coach in Jim Harbaugh and what he wants and what he needs to be successful and to lay the groundwork for his formula, which, look, if it follows anything that we saw in Michigan, they're going to place a real high emphasis on the offensive line, on the tight end position, on running the football. Now, look, they're not going to take a running back at number five. It seems a little far-fetched for Brock Bowers, the best tight end in this class at number five, although he's going to be gone not long after that. So maybe if you move down, right, if you get out of number five, you move down to, let's say, 10, 11, 12, then maybe that opens up a possibility for a guy like Brock Bowers. And then, you know, if you stick and pick, the best offensive lineman on the board is likely going to fall right into your lap at number five. Joe Alt from Notre Dame certainly feels like a real possibility there at number five. And then even if you trade down, you're probably looking at, you know, another tackle. You know, Talisa Fuaga from Oregon State, Olu Fashanu from Penn State, J.C. Latham from Alabama, Troy Fautanu from Washington. So they've got a lot of options there, and it's really going to come down to what best suits their franchise, you know, for Jim Harbaugh's image of their success.
All right, one last question before I let you go. Finish this sentence. The Raiders draft will be a success if...
Let's see if Tom Telesco finds impact players, right, from day one, not necessarily the draft, but day one, stepping into the program as guys who can really fill some voids. And then, you know, you continue to build depth. So a couple of day one impact players and then depth at the back end of the roster, I think, is something that, look, that's ultimately what you're going to look for there. So I know I probably could have just said, if you find the franchise quarterback, it's a success, but I do feel like they can still contend if quarterback doesn't come off the board early. So impact players one way or another, and then depth at the bottom of the roster.
All right, Rhett Lewis, always great stuff. You can check him out, NFL Network, NFL.com. Also, Raiders.com has the 7-round mock draft. You just told me
Let's go.
Have a life, but it makes me excited. Thanks a lot, Rhett. We always love having you on. All right, coming up on the Raiders draft special, what will Tom Telesco do in his first draft as a Raider? We're going to talk strategy with the veteran GM. But first, our good friend from NFL Network and draft analyst, former player and scout Bucky Brooks, swings by to break down his mock draft. Welcome back. Star talent doesn't just come out of the first round alone. Max Crosby was a 4th-round pick by the Raiders in 2019. And Davante Adams was taken by the Packers toward the bottom of the 2nd round back in 2014. Deep drafts build teams. And to talk about what the Raiders might do in round one and beyond, we say hello to NFL Network draft analyst Bucky Brooks. Bucky, it is always good to see you here. How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I know you're busy leading up to Thursday, but you've done mock drafts for several years, all through Tom Telesco's 11-year career as a GM. What are some of his tendencies that you've noticed over the years in his drafts?
Well, I think anyone who knows Tom Telesco has to understand who his mentor is. His mentor is Bill Polian. Tom Telesco and I were together way back, my rookie season when I was with the Buffalo Bills. He was interning. And I think what Tom has done is he has taken some of the lessons that he learned from Bill Polian and put them into practice, meaning he's going to invest in what we call the marquee positions on the field. So the marquee positions are quarterback, offensive and defense, offensive tackle, pass rusher, and then he's going to take some premier playmakers when the opportunity presents itself. But what you're going to see is he's going to invest early on in the positions that matter the most. And so it's going to be a blue chip player at a marquee position that sets the franchise up for success for the extended future.
That's interesting you say that, because in your mock draft 4.0 coming out on NFL.com, you have the Raiders selecting J.C. Latham at number 13, an offensive lineman. And now I see why you're going with that, because, look, typically Bill Polian actually taught me this, that linemen taken in the first round hit at a higher rate than most positions, definitely more than quarterback, and they play for a longer amount of time. So there's more value in your pick as an offensive lineman. But can the Raiders afford to forego a quarterback? I see why Telesco would have that philosophy, but do they need a quarterback in round one?
Well, I mean, look, so ideally in a perfect draft, you have the players that actually fit where you need. But here's the thing. If you are the Raiders and you're sitting here looking at a draft board and we're speculating that the top three picks are going to be quarterbacks. So that takes Caleb Williams off the board, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, in whatever order. They're off. So now you're looking at J.J. McCarthy, you have Bo Nix, and you have Michael Penix available. What you have to do if you're the Raiders staff is you have to look at where those players are, how they grade, and how they would grade in traditional drafts. Would these guys be top five players in another draft? Would they traditionally be a first-round player? And then you also have to take those players and compare them to the quarterbacks that are in AFC. Let's start in the division, Pat Mahomes and Justin Herbert. Can a J.J. McCarthy theoretically go compete against those guys and win if it becomes a shootout? Can they compete in the AFC against the likes of a Joe Burrow, a Lamar Jackson? You think about Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence and C.J. Stroud and all of the other quarterbacks that are in the AFC. And what you want to make sure is that you don't just reach and take a quarterback because you need one, that you're taking a franchise quarterback that is going to be able to compete at a high level against those guys that we talked about.
Can Michael Penix compete with those guys?
I think
in
so.
Parameters?
I think so. I am a huge Michael Penix fan. And one of the reasons why I'm a Michael Penix fan is I don't know if there's a better deep ball passer that we've seen in some time. This dude is a big play machine. If you watched him at UW the last 2 years, I mean, just over the top, back to back years with over 4,000 yards. People talked about just the amount of splash plays that offense produced with him under center. And the thing about Michael Penix, because we've kind of reached a point where everybody's about the off-schedule plays and the spectacular plays that happen outside of the pocket. And that's not necessarily in his game. But in the pocket, when protected, there's not a better passer when it comes to pushing the ball down the field. And I just think about the Raiders and the tradition of the Raiders. And the Raiders have always been a big play bombs away team when they've been at their best. And I think if Mr. Davis was still around, Mr. Davis would point to Michael Penix and be like, that's the guy, because he loved the long ball. And I still feel like that's a big part of the history of the Raiders. And I think that has to be a part of the evaluation.
And they got quite a few receivers that can catch the ball on the other end with Jakobi Meyers and Davante Adams. What are the biggest areas of need for the Raiders? Not the best players available. If they were drafting for need, what do they need the most?
Well, I mean, I think you need frontline help, obviously, because when you think about only having two guys under contract beyond next season, you got to make sure that you have enough depth up front. We've heard AP talk about wanting to win the line of scrimmage, wanting to kind of bully the bullies. And the only way you can do that is you have to have a talented offensive line. I would say running back has to be addressed at some point. You lose a rushing champion in Josh Jacobs. You want to make sure that you have someone that is ready to be the bell cow, ready to do it at a high level. And then the secondary. The first thing that you have to do is you got to be able to build a team that can win the division. The Raiders have done a really good job of fortifying the front line. You think about the last two off seasons, one to get Tyree Wilson, then they come back and get Christian Wilkins on the inside to go with Max Crosby. Up front, you can get it done. But the secondary is where you have to make sure that you address those issues. You got to be able to cover outside. And I love some of the young players that are playing there, but you got to be able to cover outside and you have to have a playmaking safety that can take the ball away. Those are the areas where the Raiders have to look.
You mentioned running back and having a bell cow. Do you think Zamir White could be that, along with Alexander Mattison backing him up?
I think he could be, but I think you have to add more pieces to the rotation. I think when you're looking at the way the league is evolving, if you have a back by committee situation, you got to have a thumper, a guy that can kind of grind it in between the tackles. You need to have a change of pace guy, a guy that can make plays in the passing game, screen, misdirections, draws, and those things. And then you have to have a utility guy that can do a little bit of everything. I think for the Raiders, at some point, they want that size guy that can kind of lean on defenses to make it work. Look, Josh Jacobs is not there anymore, but one thing that you can't deny is that, man, he was a physical running back who was able to handle a heavy workload. You need to either have one person that can do that, or you have to have multiple players that can kind of add up to what Josh Jacobs was able to produce when he was there.
You and Rhett Lewis, who's also on the show today, did an entire 7-round mock Raiders draft out on Raiders.com, as if you had extra time to do that. Give us the cliff notes. What are your biggest takeaways from what you saw the Raiders doing?
So Rhett is really funny. He was really excited about taking on that project. It's a it's a tough project. I think here's the thing. Everyone talks about taking the best player available, and I think that's key. But I think the trick is taking the best player available at the value that you need to take them to fill the need. And so it's juggling that, meaning when you're looking at the first round and you're trying to weigh, okay, we have quarterback, we have offensive tackle, we're sitting here at 13. What is the more valuable player? Do we take the high-end tackle and then see if we can circle around and either trade back up into the first round, or in the second round, can we get the quarterback? Or do we flip it and take the quarterback early and come back and get the offensive tackle? I think in looking at the seven-round mock, it was a lot of those scrimmages that you have to have with scouts and coaches that you have to kind of get worked out before you can attack the draft. But I will say, this draft, the first 2 days, you'll be able to find a lot of players that can come in and contribute. And then the scouting really has to get done on day three to find the hidden gems, the underrated players that are there and available. They just need the right home to be able to succeed.
All right, if the Raiders truly stuck to the best player available at 13, that actually, it could be a corner. Would it be crazy? Because I'm expecting offense to go quickly off the board. Would it be crazy to double down on defense, especially with Antonio Pierce's philosophy? Will that work in the AFC West? Can you win with defense and a Gardner Minshew and an AOC?
You can do it, but your margin for error is tighter. But you have to play good defense to be able to win. Everyone talks about the Kansas City Chiefs, and we still are thinking about the Kansas City Chiefs with Pat Mahomes throwing to Tyreek Hill and just kind of that aerial circus that they had. But the Chiefs are going back-to-back because their defense has been able to keep the score down, and they've been able to win in that vein. I would say that they have to continue to think about attacking the draft and attacking team building in that area. Hey, let's get the best players. Let's see if we can put the best defense together. We want to manufacture points, but there are tactics and strategies that you can utilize to protect your offense when your defense is thriving. Right now on paper, the Raiders' defense looks like it could be a top five, top 10 defense. You want to build and add to that, and then you can figure out how to play on offense to complement that.
Oh, add a corner there. That could be interesting. Crosby was clearly undervalued heading into the 2019 draft, maybe that, you know, not coming from a Power 5 conference. But who is a player this year in the mid to late rounds that you think could excel as a Raider under this coaching staff?
Man, that's tough. There's so many good players that can excel. I would say a player that I would keep an eye on, Cole Bishop, the safety from Utah, very athletic, a guy who has all kinds of ability to contribute, not only as a frontline player, but he's going to be a special teams player that can make some plays. I would say another safety in Cameron Kitchens from the University of Miami. He's been dinged a little bit because he didn't run the fastest time, but another really, really good player. I would say when you go out wide and you think about, we're talking about secondary, Daquan Hardy, a nickelback from Penn State, is someone that is of value who could certainly contribute. And then when we go to the other side of the ball at running back, there are a ton of running backs that will be of interest, but keep an eye on Will Shipley, the running back from Clemson. He might be the best running back in the draft, and for whatever reason, he hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but this guy catches the ball out the backfield. He's quicker than a hiccup. He has some of that Christian McCaffrey type stuff to his game. He is someone that can be drafted maybe in day three that gives you more bang for the buck when it comes down to being an RB1.
You're not the first one that said Will Shipley, so I'm going to keep my eye on him. Thanks, Bucky. Always good to catch up with you. I know how busy you are in these last couple of days leading up to the draft, but thanks for spending some time to talk a little Raiders with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Check them out, NFL.com, also Raiders.com, if you want some of the best draft analysis you will see around. Coming up on the Raiders Draft Special, we check in with NFL Network's Michael Yam and our Raiders colleague James Jones stops by. But first, we sit down with Raiders GM Tom Telesco to talk draft philosophy, Antonio Pierce, and selling the farm to get a quarterback. Well, Welcome back to the Raiders Draft Special. Tom Telesco is a Raider after 11 years as GM of the Chargers. During that time, the Chargers only won two playoff games, despite some pretty stacked rosters. Talent is Telesco's department, and since 2013, the veteran GM has one heck of a draft record, selecting seven players who've made a combined 18 Pro Bowl appearances. Whether it's Keenan Allen, Joey Bosa, or Justin Herbert, Telesco has rarely missed. And this week, he heads to Detroit, armed with eight Raiders draft picks. I sat down with the Raiders GM ahead of Thursday's first round. Well, Tom, it's good to see you again, and it's so great to have a chance to catch up with you a few days, hours before the draft. Yeah. I know things are hectic. What are these last few days and hours like? I mean, do you have the board set? Are you fielding calls, making calls to other GMs?
It's actually pretty quiet. And we try and get everything wrapped up last week by Friday, so this week's kind of calm and cool. Usually, you know, if you prepare enough, you can get that done. And then this week, maybe some calls with some different GMs. It doesn't really pick up really towards Wednesday, Thursday, to be honest with you. There's been some calls, but mostly general. But as far as our process, our board, it's pretty much ready to go. This week, it's just about not messing it up. Like, let's just not mess things up too much. If you stare at it for too long, You start tinkering with guys. You start talking yourself out of things. So we try and get it set last week, get it closed up, and we'll get ready for Thursday.
Yeah, over-analysis is a bad thing.
It
this
totally
close
is.
To the draft.
It totally is.
At number 13, that is kind of an interesting position. What makes it so unique? You're not in the top 10. You're not at the bottom of the round. What makes it a unique position?
I don't know. I mean, you're right. We're not in the top 10. We're not in the last 10. We're kind of in the middle. I guess it gives you some mobility. I mean, trading into the top 10 is not always easy, but it's doable. If there was something there that we liked, we could be aggressive with it and probably go that route. If not, you could go back. To a certain range. You know, it depends on where your board is in a particular year. I kind of have it in my head about if we trade it back, how far I'd be willing to go and still get a player that we really like. But, you know, we'll kind of see. But the one thing that's easier is if we stay and pick at 13, like, it's pretty easy to figure out who we think's going to be gone and then who are kind of like three or four guys would be available at that spot. You know, if you're picking at, you know, 30, a little more difficult to try and predict that. So, but the process has been pretty good so far.
A lot of talent expected to be there at number 13. But you had a lot of success drafting while you were the GM of the Chargers. What is your overall draft philosophy, and how has it kind of evolved now in your 12th draft as a GM?
Yeah, it certainly evolves, and hopefully you get better every year. But it's really just trying to blend a lot of opinions, you know, from the scouts, from our front office, from the coaches, from the head coach. Blend that with the objective data that we have and try and come to a decision on, you know, what player gives us the highest odds of making it. Because we fully know we're not going to be right 100% of the time. So, you know, we strip the board down pretty heavily. Like, we don't go in with a ton of names on the board. We kind of get it to a smaller list of guys that we've done a lot of work on and feel good about. And then how it's changed over time. I think when I first became a GM, we looked at positional value generally. But now, I mean, even with the draft, everybody you take, there is a salary cap implication with that, and that's not something that when I first started I ever even thought about. As time has gone on, we've kind of seen, you know, based on who you take, how it could affect your cap moving forward. So there is some positional value there. I think that's changed over time. I know I've changed a lot with that over time, and just trying to get the process better. You know, I have a certain way I've done things for a long time, both with the Colts and then with the Chargers. But then I come here, and there's some things here that they had done that I really like. So let's implement that into our system and make it a Raiders system, not my system. That's been really fun.
I hate to ask a cliche question, but there's a reason for this. I heard your story about Keenan Allen that you spoke about in your presser in your very first draft, that you felt like your receiver core was set with the Chargers, or pretty good with the Chargers that year. And you didn't really expect Keenan Allen to necessarily be what he became and how much you needed him that first year. So it's the old draft for need, draft for best player available question. But do you take that into account? And I ask you this specifically because, look, you've got Devontae Adams, you've got Trey Tucker from last year, you've got Michael, you've got a heck of a receiving core, but this is a deep receiver draft, and I feel like nobody in any mock draft or any of the media talks about the possibility of taking a position that you already feel really good about. Where do you stand with that?
Well, I mean, it's a passing league. You got to cover, and you got to have receivers and tight ends to get out and catch the ball. So, you know, it's asked every year, best player available or need. And it's just like, look, our needs, they change sometimes on a daily basis, as volatile, as unpredictable. We don't know what our needs are going to be even in August or so much like August 2025. It's too hard to know.
And they could change week two of 24.
It could. I mean, just based on injury, based on a player that you felt like was going to perform at a high level and just for whatever reason doesn't, you just don't know. Or, you know, part of the offseason program is more than just the draft and signing free agents. It's about the players you have in your team developing and getting better. Like, we have a draft class from last year, 10 players that will take a big jump this year. And a lot of that work that the coaches do with the players here to develop them, they may step up and fill a perceived need that doesn't come from the draft or from free agency. So we try and have a little bit more wide-based look at it. At a certain point, we'll have the roster the way that, hey, we can just draft strictly best player available. But again, like I said, the needs are hard to determine what they're going to be. So we try and skew towards, hey, look, what's the long-term future of this player?
You mentioned the development of the players. Antonio Pierce is now the head coach. What has his role been in the evaluation process? What is that relationship between coach and GM?
Yeah, he's got a big voice in it. I mean, he's the guy that's going to be coaching these players, and he's got a good background of evaluating players at all different levels, high school, college, pro. He played in the NFL. He knows what it takes to play in the league. I like that he has a college background, too, that he's, at least in this draft, he knows some of these players already. But he certainly has an eye for talent, which for a GM is a dream, that he has a good feel for it. And he has a big picture look at it, too. You know, as you kind of rise up the ladder, you know, usually as an area scout, it's a pretty narrow look at the player. And then as you kind of go up the ladder to, you know, to a cross checker, to a national scout, to an assistant GM, GM, and head coach, you have to have a much wider lens of what you're looking at, how it fits the football team. And he has that, how he's going to fit the team now, how he's going to fit the team in the future. So it's been great.
He really does have a feel for makeup, and I think that's what kind of makes him interesting. Defense is expected to be a strength of this Raiders team. And if you look at the overall draft, quarterback, receiver, offensive line is expected to go pretty early. Could one strategy be to double down on defense by taking a defender at number 13? Because there's going to be some top defenders there that in another year might be a top 3 to 5 pick.
Yeah, he definitely could. I mean, especially if that many offensive players go off early, you're getting, you know, maybe a top 2 or 3 defensive player. And like I said, where our roster is right now, we could use somebody almost everywhere. And we need playmakers, we need difference makers. And that's really a high majority of your difference makers come from the first round. So if there's a difference maker there that we feel can help us at any spot, offense or defense, yeah, you would strike at that.
In 2020, you drafted a franchise quarterback at number 6 in Justin Herbert for the Chargers, and that was a darn good pick. When you are evaluating a guy that is going to lead a franchise for the next 10 to 15 years, what do you look for?
You know, I think the physical traits are, I shouldn't say they're easy to watch, but at least you can see that on film, on tape, I guess in a workout. I like the tape better than a workout. But it's assessing everything else that goes. That position is the hardest position in professional sports.
It misses the most in the draft.
Yes, it does. It's like, what, 50% maybe?
40%.
40%, yeah.
In the top 10.
So it's less than 50%, yeah. and you're picking high. There's so much that goes into that job off the field, not only as the face of the franchise, but the preparation part of it, the everyday work and the grind to be a quarterback, a franchise quarterback in this league. So there's a lot of work that goes into it. And I know, like, from the Justin Herbert situation, remember Anthony Lynn really liked him as too. So you want to make sure everybody is involved in that pick and invested in that pick. So the head coach is really involved in that as well. But yeah, there's just a lot of boxes you have to check, and there's a lot of boxes that you think you may know, but you don't always know. So it's tough. But you know,
well, going along those lines, yeah. You know, recently trading up to get a guy in the top 10 and in the first round, especially a quarterback we just spoke about, has failed more than it has hit. At about 40%, they make it to a second contract. I mean, you can look at Trey Lance, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen. Knowing all of that, if you love a guy and you really believe in him, do you believe in giving the idea of selling the farm or whatever you want to call it, of what's essentially going to be at least 2 first rounders, maybe 3 first rounders to get him? Because, hey, it worked out for the Chiefs and the Bills pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, we know we're not going to be 100% right all the time. But when you go through this whole process of evaluating a player and you feel like, hey, look, we think there's really high odds this player could be a franchise quarterback for us, yeah, you could probably go that route. You just have to balance to make sure whenever this player comes in that there's enough of a team around him to perform at a high level. So you have to balance that compensation with the player. But we've seen it done before. It'll be done in the future. But yeah, there's definitely a balancing act to that.
People will keep doing it. And historically, you haven't been a huge trade up, trade down. You've had a lot of success staying and picking. Why is that?
You know, it's a good question. It's probably there's a little bit of the system that kind of lends to that. That's probably more a conversation for after the draft than before the draft.
Yeah.
But we've never been resistant to trading down. We've traded up a couple times. Me, like most GMs, like the more times you get in the batter's box to swing, the better chance to get a hit. But I think what we really have to really determine and make sure, like, whatever play you took, you know, did you execute it? Did the guy, was he successful or not? And for my time with the Colts, my time with the Chargers, we've had some relatively good drafts. They're not all perfect, but the system has kind of led us the right way. It's just kind of the way it's worked out. I mean, if there's an opportunity to trade down even this year, we'd love to do it, get some more picks, especially to keep building this football team. But if there's a player we think is there, that we think is a high odds player to make it work for us, then we'll stick and pick.
Quarterback, offensive line, corner, I can sit here and analyze what I think the needs are for the roster. In your opinion, what are the biggest needs in the roster building process right now, whether it's through the draft or whether, I mean, you got Austin Ekeler as an undrafted free agent. So.
Yeah, and if we were really smart, we would have drafted him in the second or third round, but we didn't. We took him after the draft.
You had him another year.
But it's amazing how that works. Like, we think we're really good at what we do, and obviously we all kind of missed on him because look how good a player he is, and he wasn't drafted. So. Now, I think this football, like, we just need more difference makers. Mm-hmm. And that's not all going to come in one draft. It's not going to come all in one free agency. But we need to keep adding difference makers across the roster to balance this thing out. Hopefully, we'll get one this year. Hopefully, we'll get more than one this year. Because, you know, even later in the draft, I mean, they're still there. You got to find them on the board. But there's some difference makers in the third, fourth, and fifth rounds. So we just got to find them. And even late in the draft, and maybe a college free agent like Austin Ekeler. So we'll see. But, we need to add some guys that can really make game-changing plays for us right now.
And right now, the right side of the offensive line is an area where it seems there could be some holes to fill. But with so much depth in this draft at offensive line, a lot of people are going to clamor to get offensive linemen in that first round. Do you feel like there's going to be some really quality linemen in the second and third round?
Yeah, so I kind of dodged the question in the press conference. I think Vinny asked about the strength of the draft, but since this is, you know, this is internal Raiders. No, offensive line is really strong. Like, I think it's strong all the way, definitely through the fourth round, maybe even the fifth round, which is, that's really deep. Like, I feel like you get an offensive lineman in the middle rounds that would definitely make the team be a depth player and then have some starting qualities down the road. So, it's a really strong group. And it's also a group that everybody's looking for. They're really hard to find. You know, big people that are athletic, strong, and smart, you know, it's hard. It's hard to find those guys. So, but I do think that is one of the strengths of the draft is offensive line.
You mentioned your draft class, the draft class from last year, 10 draft picks. You've got guys like Tyree Wilson and Michael Mayer and Trey Tucker and Aiden O'Connell. What do you expect to see from them in their second year? And do you feel like, I know you mentioned in your press conference, you know, Dave Ziegler gave you a pretty good base there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about those guys. And, you know, those guys are like big time players, another year of development. I'm so happy Michael Mayer's here. He's a player that we had loved last year. I think he can be a really dynamic player in our offense. Tyree Wilson with the full offseason, and he's really a versatile piece. Aiden played a ton of snaps last year. His arrow is going up. So, yeah, we need that draft class to keep coming. I love the fact that they all had a role last year playing, and now they have a full offseason. They're young veterans. They're not real veterans, but they're young veterans. They've been through this already. They have some experience. They have some snaps under the belt. So, but we need to start stacking some of these classes back to back. So we need to have another good one this year.
And I know that a GM's never done in free agency. You know, you bring in Christian Wilkins and you make the big splash. But we talked about undrafted rookie free agents. How much value do you put in the after draft prospects, the guys that didn't make the draft but maybe got missed by other teams?
Yeah, I mean, this staff and the way we kind of do it, like, we'll put as much work into those guys as we do the first round players. So a heavy emphasis on those players that are, you know, late draftable, priority free agents. The college scouts, area scouts are working on it right now with the coach as far as finalizing a list for that sixth, seventh round and also for after the draft. But we put a lot of work into it. We'll probably sign a good amount of college free agents this year. You know, probably looking at probably, you know, 24 to 27 new players coming on, whether it's a draft pick or a college free agent. But I think it's just a process. You can't shortcut it. You got to put as much work into that as you do with your first round pick. That's what we've done, and hopefully that'll pay dividends.
And it can. We talked about Antonio Pierce as far as his role in the evaluation process, but we really saw him as a motivator of men at the very end of last year and what he was able to do with this team. Once these picks come to Vegas, you say 24 to 27, what will make him a good developer of men?
Well, I mean, he already is, but I think the players that come here are lucky. The fact they get a chance to play for this guy. He's a motivator and teacher, and I think he knows each person is a little bit different touch point with that. Everybody kind of responds differently, and he's got a great feel for that. So if you really want to reach your potential, this is a great place to be. That's why I'm so excited to make these draft calls. When you actually draft, you know, call the player to say you're going to come to be a Las Vegas Raider, and then hand the phone over to AP and let him do his thing. He'll be motivating over the phone probably when we pick the player. So
he'll get them excited for training.
I'm glad I speak first. I wouldn't want to speak after him. So, but I think it's just a great situation if you're a young player to come to a team like this with the staff and with AP as the head coach.
Well, best of luck as you head to Detroit. I know Raider Nation is very excited to see this new regime and what they're going to be able to do here in Vegas. So good luck and enjoy
can't
Detroit.
Wait. Thanks for having me on.
Coming up next on the Raiders Draft Special, Michael Yam from the NFL Network joins us to talk about a national perspective on the Raiders draft. Welcome back. If the Raiders stick and pick at number 13, they'll have teams like the Broncos and Vikings selecting right in front of them. Could the three teams be vying for positioning if key players begin to fall? To give us a national perspective on the Raiders draft, we welcome in NFL Network host Michael Yam. Hey, Mike, it's good to see you.
Always appreciate the invite. It's an exciting time. Here we go, Raiders.
I know you got your black pullover on. Wait, did I see a black and silver pin? I appreciate the effort.
It is there. We got to stick with the theme. I just threw on the black polo right before this interview. I felt like I needed to give off that Raiders vibe.
Well, Raider Nation appreciates you for that. Mike, you are one of the hosts of one of the most popular national football shows out there, NFL Total Access, over on NFL Network. So when you and our buddy, you know, David Carr and Michael Robinson, all your co-hosts, when you guys sit in your production meetings, what is the number one draft topic that comes up around the Raiders?
Well, look, it's a lot of quarterback play, and you made reference to David Carr. So as you can imagine, that there's some references and some history there because of little brother in Derek. But look, I think it's abundantly clear. Most people probably in Vegas want this team to go and draft a quarterback, maybe have to move up. I know that there was conversations about Jaden Daniels and the relationship that he's had at Arizona State with Antonio Pierce. The reality is that I don't know if the Raiders have enough capital to move up to get one of those other guys. So the real question becomes for Telesco, hey, do I want to sit with what I have right now in this quarterback room, which, by the way, isn't awful. Like, I'm more of a Gardner Minshew fan than I think most are. O'Connell was a guy that performed, you know, in fairly well last season, considering he was a rookie. And I think if you're sticking at 13, I think the real question is, whoever's left of that quarterback group, how much more conviction do you have that they are better than what you currently have? Because if it's not Michael Penix, who, by the way, I love, and I know a lot of mock drafts have Penix going to the Raiders at 13. Penix, I understand, but that other group of guys, I don't know if I like them and want to invest the 13th overall pick in the draft in one of those guys, considering what I already have in-house in my quarterback room.
You mentioned, I know you covered the Pac-12, so you were around for those days, the Arizona State days, where Antonio Pierce was there, Jaden Daniels was there before he went over to LSU. And have you ever seen a situation, I mean, I guess you could go back to, you know, the Eli Manning and those, where you say you want to go to a certain team, and he says he wants to be a Raider. But you mentioned draft capital. Do you think that scenario is possible? Could you see that happening?
Not for Jaden specifically. Look, it's no secret Caleb Williams is probably going to be the first quarterback off the board going to the Bears. The I don't see a world where Jaden Daniels doesn't go and get selected by the Washington Commanders. And once again, I just don't think the equity is there for the Raiders to go and move up to get a guy like him. And you're right. Look, I was at Jaden Daniels' very first start in Tempe. And if you would have told me back then that the scrawny freshman quarterback would be arguably the best quarterback in this year's draft, I would have done it double take and said, man, I don't know about that. But it's a testament to the development, obviously, on that campus and then what we saw at LSU en route to a Heisman. But I don't see the path for the Raiders to get there. And by the way, I also don't think that's the worst thing in the world. Of course, I'd love a Jaden Daniels, but what's the cost going to be to go and get him? And, you know, the Raiders right now with AP as their head coach, we saw massive strides on the defensive side. Wilkins, to me, is the best free agent signing this entire offseason. We talked about it on Total Access. I absolutely love it. They're going to be able to pressure quarterbacks right now. And I think it's just another way to build your team, because in the AFC, there is a slew of top end quarterbacks. And right now, the Raiders, I don't know, you know, you wouldn't put their quarterback room up against some of the best, you know, whether it becomes even in the division with Kansas City, obviously with Mahomes or Justin Herbert, but there are other ways to win football games. And in my mind, you know, if you can't get the number one or number two quarterback in this class, or the guy that you feel is got the potential to be, you know, a Pro Bowler or an All Pro guy, then go and fill some of the needs that you also have on this team. Offensive line, the depth there at offensive line in the next 2 years isn't necessarily there. This is a good offensive tackle class. Like, to me, that's a path to go. They got picks in the first, second, and third round. You kind of have to hit. The Raiders don't have a slew of picks, which means there's pressure on Telesco to make sure that he gets this right.
And I love that, because the right side of the line is a big question mark for the Raiders, and they need to shore that up. And this is a deep draft when it comes to offensive linemen. If the Raiders double down, let's say that there's a really top defensive player there at 13, and they double down on defense, and they just say, we are going to limit teams. We're not going to allow them to score points. Do you think that they really could compete in the AFC West, even, let alone the AFC? I mean, with your Joe Burrows and your Lamar Jacksons and teams that can score points. Do you think that we saw a glimpse of that on December 25th when we saw the Raiders beat the Chiefs? Could that be a blueprint?
I remember being in our green room watching that game, staring at the screen in almost disbelief, considering how they won that football game. But you're right. I think there's so much attention, and rightfully so, on the quarterback position, and you needing one of those top end signal callers to go and win. The reality is there's only a handful of those guys on the planet that can play at that elite level. Not every team in the NFL is going to have one of those guys. So what are the adjustments that you go and make? And you're right. I think double downing on defense could be a potential path that's there. I would focus at 13 on offensive line if you can't get one of those quarterbacks that you really love, just because if you can tell me the game of football, everyone's going to focus in on quarterback, but I still think it's one inside those trenches. And if you can solidify, you know, one of those tackle spots, and you can get an all pro guy for the next 10 years, that's a real nice safety net for whoever that quarterback is going to be.
Now, come on, don't tell us that taking a lineman isn't sexy. I mean, we love the big uglies. Let's talk about the Broncos.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about other teams in this division. And the position that the Raiders are in, it's kind of unique at 13 because they have the Broncos, who, by the way, just traded for Zach Wilson. They need a quarterback of the future. They draft at number 12. They're right in front of the Raiders. And the Vikings definitely need a quarterback. They sit at 11. So that's two teams right in front of the Raiders that need a quarterback. Could you see the Raiders trading up, not even trying to get up to the 3 or 4 to get a quarterback, but let's say Michael Penix is still available and they get a little bit nervous and that's their guy, to get just ahead of those two teams?
Yeah, it becomes a game of musical chairs. There's X amount of quarterbacks, right, that are available that you would consider with that first round pick. And not every team is going to love, you know, that second tier. And I'll use air quotes around the second tier, because I'd say Caleb and Jaden and maybe Drake May in that top tier, JJ McCarthy, Bo Nix, and Michael Penix in tier number two. But I think Penix has incredible upside. Is there a world that exists where the Raiders could potentially move up? Yeah, absolutely. They might have to, because the Vikings have two picks in the first round. They obviously have the equity to move up even higher than 11. And the Zach Wilson trade with the Jets for the Broncos, to me, does not signal that Denver is not interested in a quarterback. That they had career starts inside that quarterback room before this trade with Zach Wilson. I think it just gets them some upside in that room with Wilson at a low cost, but there's make no bones about it. Like, this is still a team that needs a quarterback. So if the Raiders want one, I think a slight adjustment could be in play here, because the top three picks, I'm still convinced, and I think you make a real argument, the top four picks with Arizona potentially trading out of that fourth spot, you're going to see four QBs off the board.
And that would be the first time we ever saw four quarterbacks go in the top five, so history would be made. It's fascinating to me, and you must laugh at this too, how draft stock can rise and fall without one of these young men playing a game. somehow they go up and down, yet we haven't seen any new material from them. Somehow Jaden Daniels flipped ahead of Drake May somewhere in the process with a lot of these mock drafts throughout the offseason. We also hear J.J. McCarthy, he's on the rise. Why are these two players getting hyped so much in the national media? And would you be shocked if we saw Drake May go two or Michael Penix go number two?
I would be surprised with the May and Penix side, although, you know, at this point, nothing really should surprise me. I couldn't agree with you more. A year ago at this time, or maybe just past the draft, because we were obviously focused in at this time on the actual guys that were going to get drafted. But post-draft last year, the conversation was Caleb Williams and Drake May, top two quarterback prospects. Who's going to be number one? And Caleb has sort of stayed in that pole position for the most part. Drake has taken a little bit of a step back. And I think it's because of what we saw at North Carolina this past season. I think there was actual game film as to why that conversation slightly shifted. But the J.J. McCarthy thing candidly does surprise me. Michael Penix should be discussed as one of the top-end quarterbacks, an aggressive thrower, the lefty he is. Got tremendous arm talent. If anyone hasn't seen at this point some of the throws that he has made and the athletic ability, even what we saw at his pro day, I mean, his 40 time was, I think, faster than anyone would have anticipated. He just wasn't asked to use his legs inside that offense. I think he handled defenses great. I think people will point to the national championship game and say, hey, you know, they got pressure on him and that's why they lost. Yeah, I think there's part of that, but I think you go to the semifinal game against Texans and see him really perform at a really high level on a big stage. So Penix to me should be discussed in that conversation, but I'm with you on Jaden Daniels. Like, what really has happened maybe is misvaluation during the season, because people are now pointing to what he did at LSU. On his way to go get a Heisman. He was working with great wide receivers as well, two guys that are going to be first-round picks. But the point is Jaden Daniels should have been discussed, I think, more in line with the top three or four guys for most of the season. And I think when guys take a dip, it's conversation fatigue.
Well, Caleb Williams took a little dip this year versus the year he won the Heisman, and nobody's talking about that. So it's always interesting, the evaluations. And the bottom line is, Mike Yam, nobody knows what they're talking about. None of us, until we actually see what happens on Thursday. But it's fun to talk about it, and it's fun to talk with you, and it's always good to see you, my friend. Thanks for being here.
Always appreciate it. I can't wait to see what the Raiders do.
All right, catch them on NFL Network, NFL Total Access. Coming up next, should the Raiders take the best player available in the first round, regardless of need? And at 13, could that player be a receiver? Former Raider and Super Bowl champ James Jones stops by next on the Raiders Draft Special. Welcome back. There's a lot of guessing this time of year, and while nobody really knows what the Raiders will do at 13, there are a lot of mock drafts out there. Take a look at the top five players whose names have popped up the most in these mock drafts. Michael Penix is going to the Raiders at number 13 at about 21% of the mock drafts. Then Talisa Fuaga out of Oregon State, the offensive lineman. Some corners, Terrion Arnold out of Bama, Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo. And then, hey, maybe the Raiders take an offensive lineman. Some predict J.C. Latham out of Bama will be there at number 13. So who is the best fit? Well, let's bring in former Raider Super Bowl champ and Fox analyst James Jones to break it down. J.J., it's good to see you.
Good to see you, too. What's going on?
I like that you're matching the ceiling with your shirt. You're color coordinated, so you're all ready for a big show today. All right, let's start off with all these players. Who do you think the Raiders are most likely to select?
Oh, man, that's really good. I will say this. I do not want a quarterback at 13. I'm just going to say that now. So I know Penix possibly could be there, but the Raiders have so many different needs that I think they could address, and Gardner Minshew and AOC can figure out the quarterback spot. But if we're able to get a good corner, I love the cornerback out of Alabama. If we're able to get a good corner to put out there to help this defense, right? We got Jones on the other side. You get another really good corner to go out there. You know, I think that'll be good. And I'm never against beefing up the offensive line. You can never have enough linemen. So, you know, if one of those players are there, if you're able to get one of those good offensive linemen, if you're able to get that corner out of Alabama to be able to help the defense out, I think that's the route to go.
So you're cool with Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell leading this team to the playoffs?
For this season, yes. For this season, I'm cool with them leading us to the playoffs. And then for the next couple seasons, whether it's in free agency, whether it's back in the draft, then you could go get your quarterback. But we all know Kansas City Chiefs got the baddest quarterback in the planet. If his defense did not play the way that his defense played, especially in the playoffs or really all season, he does not have another Super Bowl ring. We all know Brock Purdy and the San Francisco 49ers is not in that game without the defense. So for me, for years, you've been trying to find a quarterback. You had a really good one in Derek Carr, and it didn't work out the way you wanted to work out. Let's beef up that defense. Let's get some really good players on that defense, and let's try to stop some people and go to work. And I think Gardner Minshew and AOC, they can hold it down.
All right, this is a different question than the one that I asked, because needs aside, so if we're not drafting for need, who's the best player in that group that I just listed?
The best player in the group to me, and to be honest with you, who I think is the second best quarterback in the draft behind Caleb Williams is Michael Penix. Everything I watch on him, everything he does is what you want in a NFL quarterback. Timing routes, ball out of your hands, extremely accurate, throws his receivers open. If you ask me who's the best player out of those guys that you named, is Michael Penix. I think he is going to be a superstar in this league. But I just want to build up that defense and get the Raiders a chance to go compete at least this year. Because even with a rookie, you don't know if he's going to come in and start right away. And it's like, dang, for a year, you wasted a draft pick. So for me, I'm trying to win right now. So I'm going defense. I'm going corner. But Michael Penix is absolutely special, Amber.
So if you were in the silver and black, you would like to catch passes from him?
Absolutely. If I'm Davante Adams and those boys over there, give me Michael Penix. He showed you he can run because he ran 4-4, but he's not trying to run. He's more like the Aaron Rodgers and the Patrick Mahomes and the Joe Burrows. When I have to scramble, I have enough legs to scramble, but I am trying to get this ball to my playmakers, and he does that very, very well with his ball placement and accuracy.
We know that Tom Telesco, we asked him, he's not opposed to the idea of selling the farm to go up if he really did love a quarterback. He didn't say whether he did or not. But if you could catch passes from any of the quarterbacks in this draft, let's say the Raiders could go up to number 2, who would it be? I'm taking Caleb Williams off that because expecting that he goes number 1.
Caleb's gone yesterday. like I said, for me, I think Penix is the second best quarterback, Amber. I really do. Watching these guys on tape, Jaden Daniels is more of a run-first guy. So, you know, he might come in there and you may win some games, but it's going to be some people, and I will say some people, that means receivers, tight ends, and all that, you know, might not be, you know, as happy with their targets and their opportunities to make some plays. But Michael Penix right now, I think, is the best quarterback that is NFL ready. I think he can step in right now in any offense and be able to go out there and play football at a high level the way his IQ is, the way he throws the ball. Like I said, ball placement. The kid is absolutely special. So I know it's a lot of people sleeping on him. You got Jaden Daniels, you got Drake May and those guys in front of him. But from what I've seen on tape, he's the second best quarterback in the draft.
Yet you would pass on him. You're not making any sense to me, JJ. But I'm going to move on to the next question. Let's talk about the AFC West. The receiver situation is interesting right now. The Chargers traded Keenan Allen. They traded Mike Williams. Rashee Rice could be facing a significant suspension, might not be available, at least at the beginning of the season, for the Chiefs. Could the Raiders have the best receiving core in the division?
Oh, they know could. Yes, they do. They do. You talk about Jacoby Myers. You talk about Davante Adams. And we could just leave it at them two. Even if all those other dudes are healthy, there's not a better duo in the West that's competing with Davante Adams and Jacoby. I think they have everything it takes at the wide receiver spot, whether it's running curl routes, go routes, releases at the line of scrimmage. Both of those dudes have the total package. Even talking to Edgar Bennett, like, everybody want to praise Davante, but Jacoby is built just like him, has the moves off the line of scrimmage. So these two dudes right here, I think, is the best duo in the West for sure.
This is a deep receiver draft. It's exciting if you are a receiver. Do you think the Chargers, they almost have to go receiver at number 5? We always like to keep our eye on what's going on with the Chargers. Do you think they almost have to go receiver if they don't trade that pick because of getting rid of those two guys?
Yeah, if the Chargers don't go receiver, we should fire Harbaugh now because I don't know. I don't know what his plan is. They have to go Malik Nabers. If Malik Nabers is there, they have to go Malik Nabers. I truly feel from breaking down these receivers, Malik Nabers is the best one, and that includes Marvin Harrison Jr. Malik Nabers is absolutely like that. So if he is there for the Chargers, you have to take him to be able to put him with Justin Herbert, because you lost everybody. Keenan's gone. Mike Williams is gone. You lost Everett. You're tied in. It's a lot of playmakers on your offense, pass catchers that you lost, and you have to get another guy out there to help Herbert. And this is going to be a play action pass team. Chargers are going to run first, play action pass. You get Malik Nabers, who can run, but not only that, he is special, absolutely special with the ball in his hands.
Don't sleep on Rome Odunze. I like him a lot too.
I like him too.
Yeah, he's a big body. When guessing picks, most draft analysts almost always consider team needs rather than the best player available. So let's talk about the receivers. If Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., even Brian Thomas happen to be there at number 13, would it be crazy to take them, even though Devontae is here? Because you came from the Packers. You come from a team that took Aaron Rodgers when Brett Favre was there, and then took Jordan Love when Aaron Rodgers was there.
Yeah. And I came from a team in the Green Bay Packers that it was myself, Greg Jennings, and Donald Driver. And back-to-back years, they drafted Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb. So,
yeah,
and Ted Thompson was all about best player available. Listen, if we do something like that, then we might be booking our playoff tickets very, very soon, because if we get Malik Nabers or to go with Jacoby and Devontae Adams, to be honest with you, I don't care who's the quarterback. The quarterback is truly blessed. If those three dudes are on the field at the same time, there's no way you stopping them. If we are able to protect for 2 seconds, it ain't even got to be nothing crazy. If the O-line can protect for 2 seconds, it will be a mismatch problem. So, listen, I'm all for best player available. If Malik Nabers falls to 13, I don't even think it's a question. As much as I love Penix, as much as I love the corner from Alabama, I don't even think it's a question if he falls to 13. Sometimes you just got to chalk it up and say, give us him.
Yep. And Devontae's what, 31 years old? So it's not crazy when you think about it.
His back probably hurting too.
I know your back's hurting and you're doing this. We appreciate you being here. We really saw this Raiders team respond to Antonio Pierce emotionally, mentally, at the end of last year. Almost everyone played better. What type of talent developer do you think he'll be for this young draft class? This is his first one coming in.
Oh, I think he's going to be huge. And the main thing you start with is the motivation part. It's not a lot of coaches that are able to motivate men to be able to go out here and play at a high level. And men don't necessarily respond to certain coaches certain type ways. I play with a lot of coaches, and you respond to coaches different. Antonio Pierce has a special knack of getting these players to respond. I don't know if it's the respect factor that he played. I don't know if it's, the respect factor of how he coaches certain things, but they absolutely love to play for him. They respect him. They respect what he says. And that is the start of it. And once that happens, you are going to believe whatever your coach is telling you. And I think that's what we seen last year, right? With Antonio Pierce, these dudes stepped on the field. If Antonio Pierce said, we finna go shut the Chiefs out, they ain't gonna score on offense, them boys believe that. And they went out there and delivered. And he's been doing this since high school. He did it at Poly. He did it at Arizona State, and he's doing it now in the National Football League. He just has a knack to motivate people, to teach people, to have players in the right situation, and that's what he's doing with this defense and this team.
James, it's always good to have you on, and you need to come back to the facility, do a little analysis with us, but we'll see you around training camp back this way.
Absolutely. I'll see y'all soon. I love all y'all in there.
All right. We'll see you. Also catch him on FS1 Speak. He's on Monday through Friday. Thanks a lot, James.
Not a problem.
Time now for one last thing. Jaden Daniels wants to be a Raider. He said it. And he might be available at number 3, where the Patriots say they're open for business. We don't know if the Raiders want him, but we do know it's likely going to cost Tom Telesco 3 first-round picks to get anywhere near the top 10. And even if they traded all the way up to 3, the Raiders can't predict Jaden Daniels will be there. So they better like Drake May or J.J. McCarthy or someone else a whole lot. The Chargers' new GM, Joe Ortiz, holds pick number 5, where a top quarterback might be available. But he isn't giving any discounts.
They have to make it attractive for us to move away from those players. You know, the whole, it's a fair trade, it's a wash. I don't think that's a trade that we're interested in.
So it's going to cost you. And here's the big question. Is selling the farm to trade up for a quarterback worth it? Well, since 98, about 40% of top 10 quarterbacks make it to their second contract. That means they miss more than they hit. Now, that doesn't mean it isn't worth the risk. We'd all agree it worked out pretty well for the Chiefs and the Bills with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. Still, of the 9 quarterbacks taken in the first round the past 3 drafts, Trevor Lawrence and C.J. Stroud are the only 2 we'd really consider to be a success. The jury's still out on Bryce Young and Anthony Richardson. They were just drafted last year. But Trey Lance, Mac Jones, Kenny Pickett, Justin Fields, and Zach Wilson aren't even still with the teams that drafted them. This is just within the last 3 years. So when it comes to trading up to get your quarterback, it's historically a case of buyer beware. Well, that'll do it. Be sure to keep it tuned right here to Raiders.com, all of the Raiders social channels for draft coverage throughout the week. Enjoy the weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Raiders Podcast Network. For all things silver and black, download the Raiders app and visit Raiders.com.